So we have some word conversation that we're going to have here, some stories about words. And Dan, the 20 words that are turning 100 into 2019, where did we get that one from?
Mental Floss.
Okay. So actually, both of these articles are for Mental Floss because they do a lot of Mental Floss. First of all, Mental Floss provides a lot of content for this show because they really have a lot of fun articles and fun lists and things like that, and you know, like pop culture stuff and stuff that we love to talk about, like in this case, language and words and things. And so they're fun. It's a terrific website, and it's mentalfloss.com. But 20 words that are turning 100 in 2019. Wow, 100. So the first one is anti-stress. That's 100 years old, anti-stress? The adjective anti-stress came along decades before de-stress, which was introduced to the English language in 1979. It refers to anything that prevents or alleviates stress. How does de-stress not show up till 1979, but anti-stress is 100 years old? Is there a lot of, there must have been a lot of stress in 100 years ago. You would think, right?
Yeah, probably.
That doesn't seem like a word that's 100 years old, though. That seems a little more modern, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, it seems like almost New Agey. You know what I mean? It's got kind of that kind of a feel to it.
And I'm interested that they called it stress back then.
Yeah.
I would assume that stress was developed later. I mean, it was probably, you know, just referred to as something else.
Yeah, it's true. All right, how about this? Apple knocker. You may have attended an apple knocker wedding in the past. In 1919, the sense of the word meant rustic. But dictionary.com states it could also mean uncouth or rude. Would an apple knocker wedding? What does that mean? It's an uncouth wedding, or out in the woods or something?
Like a rustic, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So a rustic, an apple knocker wedding. I've never used that. I mean, I've heard the term. I think somewhere in the cobwebs of my empty head, I believe I've heard that term, but I've never used it. Apple knocker. A newspaper article from 1927 described an apple knocker as a peculiar type of human being who insists upon doing and saying things that, while offering satisfaction to himself, causes mental and physical inconvenience to others. Well, I'm guilty of that. So you can describe... Okay, so apple knocker has several meanings then. Over the years, it's changed. But an apple knocker. Has anybody ever used the term apple knocker to describe somebody who causes mental and physical inconvenience to others by what they say? I'm surprised there wasn't a... Maybe that term was used in the early days of pro wrestling. Because doesn't that sound like something? I'm the apple knocker.
Right.
That could actually be like a wrestling character. In the cage match tonight, you know, it's The Rock versus the apple knocker. I don't even know how to pronounce this. Ballet domain? Swan Lake lovers, this one's for you. A ballet domain is a devotee of ballet. It stems from the Russian balotomain, which unites the words ballet and mania. And ballet domania is a noun. Okay, so if you are part of the ballet domain, then you're a ballomain.
Balletomain.
Balletomain? They actually pronounce...
Balletomain.
Wait, one more time?
Balletomain.
Well, they're actually pronouncing the T. Balletomain. Okay.
Balletomain.
I've never heard that before. I'm not a big ballet guy, though, so maybe that... And by the way, apple knocker will be wrestling at Balletomania. If anybody's wondering where you can see apple knocker. All right, how about bats? Unlike the animal, which Merriam-Webster defines in the singular form, bat, with an S, that's synonym of batty, as in mentally unstable or unhinged. So bats means you're nuts. Bat is the animal. Okay. All right. Beaver tail. This curiously named plant is a prickly pear cactus that grows in the southwestern U.S. and northern Mexico. British pastries, known as arlets, are also sometimes called beaver tails, but that reference came later. Okay, I've never heard. Have you ever heard beaver tail, Dan?
Never heard before now.
And it's a plant, a prickly pear cactus that grows in the southwestern U.S. and northern Mexico. Beaver tail. I love how some of these things morph, though. And then it's a British pastry. Can I get that beaver tail? You don't want that. It's a prickly pear cactus. No, I mean the pastry, the British pastry. I'll take a beaver tail. You can't have a beaver tail without taking the whole animal. You'll hurt the beaver. Oh, God, that's going to end up on the show on Friday. There you go, everybody. Jeez. All right, why don't we take a break? If you want to jump in here with any weird terms, maybe jargon that you use, we can jump into that topic as well. Weird terms or things that you referred to differently than other people. 312-981-7200. We'll get more history here from words that are... Whoa.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so words that are... words that are...
That's the music Apple Knocker walked out to during the last minute.
That's his entrance music? Apple Knocker's entrance music, everybody. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. That's, yeah. Simply Red. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. And I love that song. That's a great version of that song. That's If You Don't Know Me By Now. Robert in Wicker Park was our first person to get his Two for Tuesday requests in. And the phone lines are open. 312-981-7200 is the number. All right. We are talking about words that are 100 years old, that turn 100 this year in 2019. So let's get back to it. Complimentary close, C-O-L-E-S-E. The phrase that comes before your signature and expresses your regard for the receiver, such as sincerely yours, is considered a complimentary close. Oh, I didn't know that. Did you know that, Dan?
I did not.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Complimentary close. So when you say sincerely yours or love, whatever, that's a complimentary close. I like that. But this one's 100 years old. Danish pastry. This delicious and often fruit-filled pastry isn't actually Danish at all. The treats are called Viennese bread in Denmark because they were brought to the country by Austrians. And nowadays, we just call them Danishes, even if it is a misnomer. Now, you know, Dan, when you were away last week, we did a segment where we were talking about Chicagoese. And words and phrases that were pretty exclusive to this city. And someone texted in that we don't say Danish here, you know, on the East Coast and stuff like that. They say Danish. Here we say sweet roll, which is true. It's true. We say sweet roll here in Chicago instead of Danish.
That's interesting because I've only referred to it as a Danish.
Really?
I've never heard sweet roll.
You've never heard sweet roll?
No.
Wow. Maybe it's an age thing. I don't know. Maybe it's an egg, because when I was a kid, it was always sweet rolls.
Huh.
My dad still calls it sweet rolls. I still call it sweet. Maybe it's because I'm old. I don't know. But someone texted that in last week when we were talking about that. Because we were doing stuff like, you know, front room.
Sure.
Gangway.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. The stuff that's exclusive to Chicago. The stuff that makes this city so unique. And then, of course, we started getting into the, you know, it got to the point where we were, you know, having people calling in and stuff and texting in. And we just started sounding like the super fans. And that, you know, that sketch, as funny as that sketch is, I also hate it.
Sure.
I mean, it's funny as hell, and I love it. And Robert Smigel is the guy who came up with it. It was his baby. He's the, by the way, for those people who don't, because when you watch that sketch, the old version of that sketch, you have Mike Myers, okay? Okay? Recognizable Mike Myers. You have Chris Farley, obviously recognizable. You have George Wendt, recognizable. The guy that you don't know, that's Robert Smigel. That's Robert Smigel. You now probably know who he is. I mean, you know who Robert Smigel is now. But back in those days, he was just a writer on SNL. And he had not created Triumph yet or, you know, been in front of the camera or anything like that. And he didn't have his trademark goatee because he's wearing a fake mustache and he looks completely different. But that's Robert Smigel. He's the other, he's the guy that you don't know who's in the Chicago Superfan sketches. But yeah, it got to the point where we were just acknowledging that, okay, maybe we do kind of. But then when people watch that, people from different parts of the country watch that and they go, look at these idiots from Chicago. Look at how they talk and act. So, like, it's a that sketch is like a double-edged sword for me because I think it's really funny and it makes me laugh. But then I'm like, well, everybody thinks we're idiots. Like, everybody thinks we act, everybody in Chicago acts like these four morons and talks like that.
And eats like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Coughing up whole pork chops and stuff. That's it. Chris Farley has a heart attack. He has a heart attack during every sketch. And then they ask him, how many is that for you? That's a baker's dozen. So, no, you never heard Sweet Roll?
Never heard of Sweet Roll.
Wow.
Or maybe I have and I just didn't realize it was a Danish, but.
Yeah, that's what they did. So, you know, I always call it Sweet Roll too, but I mean, I refer to it, you know, you can obviously, it is, that's what a Danish is. It's a sweet roll. But yeah. When I worked at McDonald's, we called it Danish because that was, you know, you would stick it in, do they still have Danish? Well, they got all kinds of stuff now at McDonald's. But back when I worked at McDonald's, like in the early 80s, they had a steamer for the Danish. So you would have, I can't remember what kind, I know they had different kind of, a couple of fruit kinds and a cheese Danish they had. And you would stick it onto the, there were like little spikes inside the steamer. And you would take the Danish and put it in and jam it onto the spikes and then close the thing and press the button and it would steam the Danish. So when you would give it to someone, it would be nice and hot and steamed. And we used to sell those things like crazy. The cheese Danishes were the ones that sold the most. But, yeah, we referred to them as Danish there. They were not sweet rolls. So, all right, how about this? Didgeridoo. This fun-to-say instrument invented by Australian Aborigines first wormed its way into the English language in 1919. It's essentially a bamboo or wooden trumpet. Do you think a didgeridoo sounds like a trumpet? I don't think a didgeridoo sounds like a trumpet.
Yeah, that would not be the instrument I would think of.
I mean, it would fall into the category of an instrument that you blew into in order to get the sound, but that doesn't sound anything like a trumpet. I mean, nothing sounds like a didgeridoo. The only thing that sounds like a didgeridoo is a didgeridoo. All right, how about this one? Dunker. This early sports team is straightforward, and this early sports term is straightforward enough. It refers to a basketball player who makes dunk shots. The sport itself was invented 28 years earlier in Springfield College in Massachusetts. Okay, now here's one I'm surprised is 100 years, is 100, completely surprised is 100 years. People were dunking basketballs in 1919? Really?
That's a good point.
I mean, I remember dunking becoming like a big deal in the 70s. That's when I, and like Dr. J and all those guys, that's when I don't remember historically a lot of, you know, guys in the 50s and 60s dunking, let alone in 1919. But I think the dunking phenomenon began with Dr. J, and that was in the 70s. And then it just increased from there. Remember when they started shattering backboards? Was it Dominique Wilkins? Didn't Dominique Wilkins break like 5,000 backboards, shatter them?
That sounds right.
Wow, I can't believe there were dunking basketballs in 1919.
I wonder, too, you know, if it's not like a dunk that we know today where it's like they touch the rim, but more just like they manage to get above the rim and then just like drop it in.
Yeah.
You know, because you see those old timey basketball footage and, you know, the way they dribble and the way they shoot and things like that.
I just don't even see guys in 1919 getting off the ground.
Right.
You know,
I mean, there's no shot clock. They used to just dribble the ball out.
I mean, I just don't see them getting a lot of height. You know? Yeah, that's pretty weird. Yeah, no, I'm pretty convinced that the art of the dunk as we know it now began with Dr. J. I think Julius Erving is the guy that is sort of, you know, the sort of spectacular show-offy crazy dunks that we see nowadays have evolved from where it all started, and that was Julius Erving. I'm pretty sure. So, all right, we got a break here for news, and we got more. If you guys want to jump in here, if you're a dunker from 1919, eating a Danish, 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 301 area code requesting Chicago 25 or 6 to 4. 25 or 6 to 4. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday morning. We're here until 5 a.m. And we're talking about words that are 100 years old this year, 2019, and how some of them are hard to believe that they're that old. And we were talking about dunker, which is this early sports term is straightforward enough. It refers to a basketball player who makes dunk shots. Sport itself was invented 28 years earlier at Springfield College in Massachusetts. And I was saying that I find it hard to believe that dunker could be 100 years old, and I just can't picture guys playing basketball in 1919 dunking. But when then we were thinking maybe it's a little bit different. You know, what we think of in terms of dunking today is a little bit different than what it was back 100 years ago. And we got some people who are calling in. Here is Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning. I forgot to wish you and then Dan Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you.
You know, I happened to saw a program the other night. It had to do with people, things left in the well. It had to do with basketball. And, yeah, there was dunking allowed, but it was, well, not outlawed. It was banned once Lou Alcindor, well, Kareem, started playing basketball. And for a while there, it was not allowed in basketball, the dunk shot. But they did bring it back, I don't know, less than 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was kind of interesting.
So it existed. Did they talk about how far back actual dunking existed in the sport? Because I just can't imagine it being a popular thing in 1919. I don't know why.
It was, as far as I know, it was one of the original things you could do in basketball, and it was actually to the point before you couldn't even dribble. When you had to pass a shot, you had to stop,
yeah.
and then pass the ball. You couldn't dribble with it. Which seems kind of
right.
Odd nowadays.
It does seem weird, yeah. It does seem weird, yeah.
As far as sweet rolls, you know, I always consider sweet rolls just a generic term for all sweet rolls. And like a Danish would be something like something that's more flat and filled with fruit in the center, personally, but that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, I think sweet rolls is kind of a generic term, and it includes Danish and anything that sort of resembles a Danish if it has, like, fruit in it or it has, like, maybe a frosting on top of it. Glenn, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you, Nick?
All right.
Hey, Nick. I wanted to tell you about a few years ago when Gus Johnson played for Washington. He came to Milwaukee, and my friend Jeff was up in the grandstands, and all of a sudden these guys were like holding them underneath, and then they did a couple fast breaks, and he came down and he slammed the ball so hard the basket just shattered, and my friend Jeff said that they were selling beer to him. He was underage. They were, you know, they didn't know what to do after a while. I didn't really believe him, but that's what he said. And then as far as pastries go, I'm a peanut square guy, and I just wanted to say Happy New Year.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Bill. Take care. There you go. So they got a kid, underage kid, drunk, and he shattered a backboard. Jeez. Canadian Bill says beaver tail are also sold at the carnivals. They're sometimes called elephant ears. That's what they're called here, right? Elephant ears? That's they're not beaver tails. Like if you go to like a fair or something, it's elephant ears. 301 area code says, I do recall the term complimentary clothes from back in the 60s when I was at parochial school in Pennsylvania. I like that term. 309 area code says, what about Wilt dunking in the 50s and 60s? All right. Bob Medea, Nick, and 816 area code. I'll say Daryl Dawkins was famous for shattered back. That's right. Daryl Dawkins busted out a lot of backboards. Shattered a lot of them.
I was surprised to find out. I was thinking maybe like, well, maybe the rim was lower, so maybe that's why back in 1919 they could dunk. But according to this, Naismith had 10 feet from the beginning. So it wasn't a situation where the rim used to be like 7 feet and somebody could do it. And then according to the Wikipedia article on slam dunks, the earliest known attributed dunks were by Bob Kurland in the 1940s and 50s. He was 7 feet tall and was the first known person to do it in the games.
All right. Yeah, but it was one of those deals where it was just like the exceptionally tall guys would do it, you know?
Right.
I mean, guys are over. So like Will Chamberlain was like, what is Will Chamberlain? He's 7 feet tall. So I think in the early days, if you were 7 feet tall, you could actually dunk without jumping very high. But then in the days when like guys who were like 6'3" or whatever were jumping, you know, like how tall is Jordan? What is he like 6'4"?
6'6".
Is he? Oh, he's 6'6". Oh, okay. I mean, that's pretty tall, but still, that's a lot of height, man. He would get, well, his name is Air Jordan, so yes, I mean, yeah. But everything, it is interesting how all sports have changed. You know, like tonight, obviously, Dan, you know, I'm showing the movie Slapshot. And that movie, when you watch that movie, it's like, wait a minute, these guys aren't wearing helmets. There's barely any pads. The goalie's just got like a face mask on and like very, very little padding on his body. And the sticks are wooden. And guys are really slamming each other into the boards and stuff like that. And how things have changed and the rules have changed over the years and the style in which you play any kind of sport. And basketball's another one that has completely, you know, evolved over the years.
There was an interesting kind of back and forth about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. There was a free agent pitcher who was on some podcast, and Babe Ruth came up, and he said, you know, Babe Ruth wouldn't be able to do anything today. It was probably in relation to Shohei Ohtani and all that. And he's just like, you know, Babe Ruth couldn't hit my, you know, knuckleball, you know, he couldn't even do it. And like, it brought up a big back and forth between historians or not, because they say the one game that kind of stayed true is baseball. Mm-hmm. Like a guy who played baseball in the 1900s in theory could play baseball today and mm-hmm. still have some level of success. And a lot of people said he would need a little bit of time, but he probably could still hit a ball very far, even if it was traveling 20 to 30 miles faster than it was back when he was playing. Couldn't say that again. And to your point, a hockey player today couldn't, you know, versus a hockey player back then or a basketball player back then versus a basketball player now.
And also, in terms of Babe Ruth and what he would play, would he be a good pitcher? Would he be considered a good pitcher now? you know what I mean? Which I've always found fascinating because Babe Ruth, you know, obviously, you know, historically one of the greatest baseball players that's ever played the game, and he played a bunch of different positions and, you know, known not only for just all the home runs, but he was a pitcher as well. Like, you don't see that anymore. Like, you don't see pitchers don't do that. That's not what, you know. That's why there's a designated hitter. So, which I hate, by the way. I'm one of those people that hate the designated hitter. I hate it. All right, let's get back to some of these terms. Here's one, another one that I can't believe is 100 years old. Fanboy. This term for a boy or man who is extremely or overly enthusiastic fan of something or someone predates our internet-fueled obsession with celebrities. The female equivalent, fangirl, didn't roll around until 1934. I cannot believe that Fanboy is 100 years old. I mean, I would have thought the term was like 20 years old, you know,
right?
With the internet and everything, but wow, 100 years old. How about this golden retriever? These very good golden boys were first bred in Scotland in 1865. A breeder mated a yellow retriever with a tweed water spaniel, and their offspring became a new breed of dog that would later be called the golden retriever. That's where the golden retriever came from. That's 100 years old. Here's one, 100 years old jigsaw puzzle. According to the online etymology dictionary, the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle were cut with a vertical reciprocating saw called a jigsaw in the early 1900s, hence the name jigsaw puzzle. Before that, they were known as dissected maps or dissected pictures. So it's actually named after the saw. I didn't know that. So that's where the jigsaw puzzle comes. That's really interesting. Dissected maps. That sounds like fun. Hey, honey, you want to put together a dissected map? Man, oh man. How about this one? Out gas. No, this doesn't refer to a farting contest, but rather the removal of gases from a material or space, usually by heating. Out gas. Okay, phooey. What in tarnation? This interjection used to express disgust has probably been in use before your grandpa was born. Some other fun synonyms include faw, few, yick, and rats. Phooey's a good one. All right, how about this? Putsch. We can thank the Swiss-German language for this word, also known as a coup d'etat. It refers to a secretly plotted and suddenly executed attempt to overthrow a government. All right. A few more of these words. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll come back and get to your texts and calls at 312-981-7200 and much more after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it's 2 for Tuesday. Give me a 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. 301 area code, requesting Chicago. Does anybody really know what time it is? And we're back. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. That's coming up, too. We've been talking about words and phrases that are 100 years old this year, and some of them I can't believe were around in 1919. How about skivvies? Anybody ever say skivvies?
I've used it once or twice.
Have you? If you're looking to spice up your vocabulary, swap out underpants for skivvies. According to one newspaper article in 1927, this word started out as U.S. Navy slang. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I thought it came from, the skivvies. I wonder if people still use that term. I like that word. I think skivvies is a pretty cool, funny word. All right, how about this? Snooty. Snobby is a slightly older term, having first been documented in 1846, but snooty also gets the point across. If you don't like either of those, try snotty, potty, or the chiefly British term, toffee-nosed. Toffee-nosed has been used frequently in Python routines. That's the only reason that I know toffee-nosed. It's been in Python, and you know I sort of enjoy British comedy, and I've heard toffee-nosed many times as an insult. And I'm trying to remember what there's a specific Python, pretty famous Python sketch, where it's used as part of like this rant, and I think it's is it Michael Palin or is it, no, it's probably John. Maybe John Cleese used it on Fawlty Towers. Maybe it was one of Basil's insane rants on Fawlty Towers. So, Dan, did you ever watch Fawlty Towers?
No, I haven't seen an episode.
Oh, it's the best. It is really, truly one of the greatest shows of all time. And, man, it's funny. It's just, and Cleese is amazing on it. He's just, he's unbelievable. But yeah, Toffee-nosed. How about super pimp? This word is exactly what you'd expect, a very successful pimp. How one defines success of this nature is another question entirely. Wait a minute. In 1919, they were using the word super pimp? What? See, this is just, this is amazing to me. That super pimp is a term that's been around for 100 years. How is that even remotely possible? Jeez. Oh, all right, how about this? Xanadu. It's been around 100 years. Long before Xanadu was an awesomely terrible movie starring Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly, it meant an idyllic, exotic, or luxurious place. Samuel Taylor Coleridge's 1816 poem Kubla Khan refers to a place called Xanadu, and his rich imagery fired public imagination and ultimately contributed to the transition of Xanadu from a name to a generalized term for an idyllic place. Merriam-Webster notes it also happened to be the name of Charles Foster Kane's fictional estate in Citizen Kane. That's true. Yeah, it's really crazy about that. You know, everybody talks about the movie Xanadu, which was just completely ridiculous. Gene Kelly, Olivia Newton-John on roller skates and stuff. It came out in early 1980. And have you seen clips from Xanadu ever, Dan?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly unbelievable. I paid money to see that movie in the theater. Now here's the part of the movie that just kills me. Is that there's an actor in it named, his name is Michael Beck. All right? And that was his follow-up to being the lead warrior in the Warriors. Like, he's a total badass. He's Swan in the Warriors. Michael Beck, total badass in the Warriors. Like, and then he's running around wearing, you know, bad clothes, and, you know, he's got whatever the pants with the wide
bell bottoms.
Yeah, he's wearing bell bottoms, and I'm skating around singing bad songs. And I remember seeing it because this was about a year after Warriors came out, maybe less than a year after the Warriors came out. And I remember sitting in the theater going, "What are you doing? You're Swan from the Warriors. Why are you here? Why are you even participating in this?" It was a tough go for fans of the Warriors, I got to say. And what the hell was I watching where they showed clips from it? I was just watching something where they were showing clips from Xanadu. I was watching something on TV. What was I watching? I can't remember. But they clips playing from Xanadu. And there's Michael Beck. It was where they were. They actually mentioned Michael Beck. They said it was a movie about making movies. It was a movie about making TV or movies, because they actually mentioned Michael Beck by name and say, "We want to cast this Michael Beck." Oh my God, I can't believe it. I have the worst memory in the world. Oh, look at that! It's our friend Bill from Central Continental Bakery. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know. Nothing much. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Shame about the Bears. And I just wanted to tell you, the Monty Python that you're talking about is The Argument. I think it's Graham Chapman and John Cleese. And Graham Chapman comes in and John Cleese says, he starts saying insulting things. I used to know it by heart.
Doesn't he say toffee-nosed pervert?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll get to that. I don't know that whole thing. But anyway, he sits down, I think it's Graham Chapman, but
It's the, you know who it is? Wait, Bill, it's the Argument Clinic, right? That's Palin.
Right, right.
That's Palin. That's not Graham Chapman. That's Palin.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know the thing I talked about. And he says, is this the 5-minute argument?
Yeah.
And he says, no, I think I'll go for the whole full half hour. And so John Cleese was just insulting him. And he's like, that's not an argument. Sure, yeah. There's this, that, and the other. And they're like going back and forth. And he says, your kind really makes me puke. You blah, blah, blah. I can't remember all the words.
Yeah,
blah, blah,
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Mellow face. Covert or something. He goes, what? You know, or something.
That's it.
And then he goes into getting hit on the head lessons.
Right.
After that,
right,
I think.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I love that stuff. I lived by it for years.
Yeah, me too. All right, Bill.
Anyway,
thanks, man. I'll see you on Punchki Day.
Probably.
All right.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you. Thanks.
All right, man. Take care. There you go. Bill from Central Continental Bakery, where we get our Punchkis every year. Punchki Day is coming up. What are we about? Well, is Easter later this year? Because it was really early last year. Wasn't it really early last year? Like early March or something?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Mid-March?
I want to say Fat Tuesday / Ash Wednesday was Valentine's Day.
I think you're right. I just remember it being really early last year. So, but we always, that's one of the, as I've mentioned before, one of the many advantages to working this shift is we get the punchkis before anybody else does in this station, and they are the freshest because they come directly from the bakery.
April 20th this year for Easter.
April 20th for Easter, so Lent will be in March then?
March 6th, yeah.
March 6th. Okay, so that'll be Fat Tuesday leading into Ash Wednesday. But we usually get them the day before that, right? Don't they usually come in the day? A few days before. All right, so early March, beginning of March, we'll get some punchkis. All right. All right, let's take a break, everybody, and then we're going to come back and talk more words. These are 15 words that aren't as straightforward as you think. More talk of phrases and words. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News right after this. Man, I haven't heard this song in years. Carly Simon, Michael in Iowa, requesting Carly Simon with You Belong to Me. Yeah, man, it's 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about products that you didn't think would be obsolete and much more. We have a Blackhawks Express to play. Another not good one, but we will play it back. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us for talk and text. Nick DiGilio here until 5 a.m. in the Allstate Skyline studio. So we were just talking about more. We got more words here to talk about. Let's see. There's an old wives' tale that says the step and stepmother and stepfather refers to the fact that they're added on to the charts one step away from the biological ones. So the genealogical charts that are added to, unfortunately, that's completely untrue. Despite appearances, the step in those words stems from the old English term steep, which is to indicate loss or bereavement. Way back then, stepchild or stepchild meant orphan, not just offspring of a second spouse. Here are 15 more words whose true origin doesn't and meanings aren't quite as straightforward as they seem. First one is quicksand. The quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. Remember we were talking about quicksand, Dan? About how it was like a thing and it just doesn't happen anymore?
Right.
And, you know, I was talking about how when I was a kid, it was in cartoons, it was in adventure shows, it was in TV, it was in movies. Like quicksand was like, oh no, you're walking through the jungle and then all of a sudden you're sinking, you're in quicksand. And is that just, you know, did we ever discover whether quicksand just doesn't exist anymore or it's just not represented as well as it used to be in the entertainment industry?
I believe it's just the representation because I was surprised that there was like articles and articles dedicated to what you're describing.
To quicksand.
Yeah, and its use in film and
yeah, you know, I mean it was.
TV.
I mean, no, it was a thing. I mean, it was a fear. You know, it was so ubiquitous that kids my age watching movies or cartoons or adventure shows or something like that would be like, oh no, it's quicksand. Like it was like a thing. It was a thing that freaked you out, and it was a cliche. It got to the point where it's a cliche. Like you couldn't make a movie that took place like. You know, somebody's trekking through the jungle then you can't do a you know, an adventure show or something like that where someone's going through like the jungle or the forest or something and comes across, you have to have a scene with quicksand and someone being rescued from quicksand. Is there quicksand in any of the Indiana Jones movies? I don't think there are. I don't think there is in the first one. But I mean that you would see, because that's the kind of, those are the kind of movies that, you know, the Indiana Jones movies are, you know, obviously inspired by the old serials, and quicksand was a staple in those things. So I'm surprised that, you know.
According to Indiana Jones Wikipedia, in 1936, Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenwood got trapped in quicksand while fleeing crocodiles in Africa. They were rescued by a Nazi SS colonel disguised as a doctor.
What? Does it? Wait a minute, then.
And then
he said him and he and Marion.
Marion Ravenwood, yeah.
So that's Karen Allen. That, no, that may, oh, wait a minute. Maybe it was in the fourth one. In the piece of crap that came out.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. Cause I was going to say there's no scene like that in, so that's the, in the Skull movie, the, yes, the Shia, yes, LaBeoufy.
Yes. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
See, that's why I don't remember it. that's why I have no memory of the, of them in the, cause it was in the terrible Indiana Jones movie. So. But see, I told you there has to be. You have. You can't make adventure movies from that era without having quicksand. I will say this though. You know, I'm about to read what quicksand. You know, the quick and quicksand doesn't mean fast. It always seemed to me in these movies, it always took a while. It never seemed very quick.
Good morning.
You're on the, your mic's on, Dan. It always seemed. It never seemed quick. You know, it was scary because you're getting sucked into the earth, but it wasn't like you got, it wasn't like you got dragged down, you know, whipped underneath the earth. It took a while to sink in quicksand. So that's why I always thought the name was a little bit weird, because it's not quicksand, it's slow sand. I mean, but again, it's terrifying because if it, like your arms, sometimes you know, like there would be quicksand where you couldn't move your arms, like if you had your arms at your sides, like once your wrists sunk into the quicksand, you couldn't move them. So you just would sink straight down. It took a while, but you could sink straight down. But anyway, the quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. Despite what you might think about the stuff sucking people into their deaths before they have time to escape, the word isn't a synonym for speedy. Doesn't mean fast. Doesn't mean fast in the word quicksilver, an old name for mercury, either. Instead, these adjectives both mean alive or living, a reference to the moving, animated ground in a patch of quicksand, and the fact that quicksilver is a liquid that can move and be poured. So that's pretty cool. It means live sand. That makes more sense than quicksand. Living sand, that makes more sense than quicksand. Because like I said, it's not quick. I really think we need to bring quicksand back as a regular thing in movies. I don't know about you, but I miss quicksand. Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, evening, Nick. And first off, Happy New Year. I didn't get to call you earlier in the year.
Same to you.
When I was in the Army Reserves, I was a combat engineer with combat heavy equipment operators. We built roads, blew up buildings and stuff. But
yeah. We
were over at Indiana at Camp Atterbury building a road on their post for them. And the old guys around there, you know, the old guys that worked on post said, yeah, there's quicksand out here, so you guys be careful. And we all thought, yeah, right. Well, we were working on the road, and it was time to take a break for lunch, so guys stopped the dozer and got off it, and we went underneath the shade tree, and we looked over, and next thing you know, the dozer is sinking.
Oh, no!
And it got up to the top of the running boards before we could get cables and stuff hooked onto it to drag it out, but it took, like, 9 other bulldozers to pull it out.
Wow.
And then I live out west of Chicago, and out west there's a little town, Ashton, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And grandparents used to say that out in some of the fields around there, they had lost teams of horses to what they believed was quicksand. They'd just be out there plowing away with their team of horses, and all of a sudden, boom, they're gone.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of weird, but you don't hear about it that much. But, you know, I guess it happens in it'd have to be a sandy area, which
sure.
Every military post on in the United States is built on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they always use the worst ground around. So, but yeah, that was kind of freaky to watch a bulldozer just sitting there and all of a sudden just start sinking.
That's crazy. That's really crazy, yeah. Man. That is really crazy. Well, see, it's a real scary thing, quicksand.
Yeah, you know, you don't know what to do. Do you run? Do you, you know, how far out does it go, you
right,
know?
Right, right. Wow. All right. Wow, well, Rich, that's a hell of a story.
Yeah, but it would have been neat if Tarzan would have swung out of a tree exactly. And grabbed us like we do on the TV.
Exactly,
you know?
Right. Swinging on a vine, yeah. Comes in, grab him, he'll pull you out of the quicksand. Everything
yep.
Will be fine.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Thank you, Rich.
All right. Have a good evening.
All right,
yep, bye.
All right. I think living sand is better. That makes it even sound creepier. There's a very funny quicksand scene in Blazing Saddles. All right, but quick in quicksand doesn't mean fast. How about this? The lolly in lollipop doesn't mean lollying. The old story that the word refers to popsicles and icicles that droop as they melt isn't true. In fact, the lolly is an old English dialect term for the tongue. Oh, well, see, now that makes sense. A tongue pop. That's what it is. The mid in midwife does not mean middle. For that matter, the wife in midwife doesn't mean, well, wife. The word wife originally meant woman, while mid stood for with, making midwife a woman who is literally with a woman as she gives birth. Okay, that makes sense. The wilder in wilderness does not mean wild. At least not in the sense of the woods and wilds. The wilder is a corruption of the old English wild doer or wild deer or animal, which you would definitely find in the wilderness. All right. The cut in cutlet doesn't mean trimmed. This prefix has nothing to do with cutlets being cut from a larger joint of meat. In this case, cutlet descends from the French word castellet, which means little rib. I always thought cutlet meant that it was cut from a bigger piece of meat. See how stupid I am? The bell in belfry does not mean bell. A belfry isn't necessarily a bell tower. The original belfry was actually a mobile siege tower that could be wheeled up to castles and town walls by invading armies to gain access from the outside. In that sense, the word derives from Burgfritt, which is the old Germanic name of a piece of equipment. So it derives from that, belfry. And if you have bats in the belfry, you're nuts. See, we talked about that earlier.
All comes together.
Combining the two. All right, let's take a quick break here. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and for text. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. It continues, 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. Get your request in. We'll play them in a little bit. It's Michael in Iowa requesting Carly Simon. That's Haven't Got Time for the Pain. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday morning. And, yeah, we've been talking about the origins of some words. We were talking about words that are 100 years old, and now we're talking about 15 words that aren't as straightforward as they look. Sometimes they mean something else than the obvious. And if you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. How about this? The ham and hamburger doesn't mean meat. The beginning of the word has nothing to do with meat of any kind. You probably know that one already. Hamburgers are people or things that come from Hamburg, Germany. Knew that one. That one I knew. Unless you have a burger made out of ham. You can grind up some ham and make a burger out of it and have a ham hamburger. The Jerusalem in Jerusalem artichoke doesn't refer to the city. The adjective for this unassuming tuber is a corruption with the word Italian word for sunflower, which is girasol. Jerusalem artichoke is not an artichoke. It's actually a member of the sunflower family. It's also called a sunchoke or a sunroot. I've never heard of it. I've heard sunchoke. I've never heard. Have you ever heard Jerusalem artichoke?
I have not.
Sunchoke is what I've heard it referred to as. The piggy in piggyback does not mean pig. Piggyback is believed to be a corruption of a pick-a-pack or pick-pack, a 16th century expression for carrying something on your shoulders. It might derive from the old use of pick to mean pitch and pack meaning a sack or a satchel. What's that tongue twister? Pick a peck of pickle
peppers.
Picked a peck of peedle. I better stop while I'm ahead because I might say something that just slips out that I just don't want to say.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Is that where that comes from, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many pickles did Peter Piper pick? There's that, because it goes on. I think it's longer than just that.
Right.
It goes on. Were you ever good at those things, those tongue twisters?
No, I was
things?
Awful.
Oh, my God. I can't. Me neither.
Especially the Sandy by the Seashore.
Selling seashells?
I believe so, yes.
So she sells seashells by the seashore. Yeah, you know that those are like Dan. You know, I did theater for a while here in Chicago, and there were actors who would do their vocal warm ups with those things. You know, like in Anchorman, in Anchorman when Ron Burgundy. When Ron Burgundy is warming up before they go on air, it's that kind of thing. You do the get your lips all loose and everything, and the vocal exercises. It does help. You look foolish, but it does help. But I don't know if I've ever did the tongue twisting thing. I'm not a good actor. I just didn't care. I mean, half the stuff that I was in, I wrote, and I wrote the stuff based on me. So it would be easy for me to just go on stage and go, yeah, whatever, it's me. All right, how about this? The sand in sand blind doesn't refer to the beach. Sand blind is a 15th century word seldom encountered today outside of literature and poetry for being half blind. It is often said to allude to the poor visibility experienced during dust storms or sandstorms, but it's simpler than that. Sandblind derives from its Old English equivalent, Sam blind, the Sam of which means the same as semi does today. Oh, that does make sense. The curry in curry flavor doesn't mean stew. Curry favor doesn't mean stew. It's an old myth that currying favor with someone alludes to slowly working your way back into the social circle, just as the flavors in a curry or stew mingle together as it cooks. Wow, that's pretty cool. I wish that was the actual reason. Instead, the true story behind this one is more peculiar, even more peculiar. In this case, curry derives from a Middle English word meaning to groom a horse. What? While favor is a corruption of favel, the name of a chestnut-colored horse that appeared in an old French poem and folktale about a horse that wanted to usurp its master and take over his kingdom. Never had that kind of experience with horses before, Dan. They were always very kind to me.
Yeah, you know.
They never tried to usurp me and take over my kingdom.
As far as you know.
Oh, it's true. They could have been planning something.
Right. I mean, you were only, what, eight, six, wasn't you?
I was young, yeah. The last time, well, I mean, I've been on a horse as an adult, but the last time I was actually, like, did the horse equestrian stuff, it was probably 10, 11.
Was it like riding a bike when you rode the horse as an adult? Or did you
You know what it's
equestrian training?
I will tell you what it ruined for me. Horseback trail riding.
Mm.
It ruined it for me because, like, I actually rode a horse for real. You know, when you go on these trails and it's just a line of horses with their noses in the next horse's butt, and you're just plump, clink, clump down a trail that they've gone down 9,000 times and they're depressed because they're in a really crappy stable and they're probably not being fed well or taken care of the way they should be taken care of. I have news for you. That's not horseback riding. Horseback riding is an entirely different thing. And I remember, I'll never forget this. I was like, I hadn't been on a horse in a couple of years. Two, 3 years, I hadn't been on a horse. We were at a campsite that offered horseback riding, like a horseback trail. And I was like, oh, I haven't been on a horse in a while. This will be fun. And so we go, and then it's, you know, and I'm like, what is this? I wanted to break out of the trail and just, you know, haul ass on the horse.
Right.
So I haven't been on a horse in many, 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 many years, but... You know, and I probably should just start out with the trail now because considering how screwed up my body is at this point and the kind of shape I'm in, I've been thrown from a horse.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah yeah. More than once. Yeah, more than once. And I still love them. I know. Esmeralda hates them. They got because what did she say?
The
they
eyes.
Have like human eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's right. Every time we talked about horses, we would bring up that scene from The Ring, where the horse is on the ferry and it goes nuts and jumps over. Which is the only to me the only scary scene in that. I don't like The Ring, but to me the only scary scene in that movie, and it really freaks me out. That really freaked me out. But yeah, no, I've been thrown. But yeah, I remember when we went camping, man. I was like, oh, this is gonna be great. We're gonna go horseback riding. Good dirk, good dirk, good dirk. This is fun. All right, let's take a break. We got more origins of weird words and stuff. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. 2 for Tuesday continues. We're here till 5. It's 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill is 2 for Tuesday. Request April Wine with Weeping Widow. The lead singer got his favorite guitar back recently after it was stolen 46 years ago. What? How did that happen? How did he get his guitar back after 46 years? What? Did somebody... yeah, I took it 46 years ago. I felt bad about it, so I'm going to give it back to you now. That's weird. All right. April Wine. We'll hear another song by April Wine a little bit later on. Perhaps somebody got... The drummer got his drum kit back after 57 years. I don't know. We have not finished Curry Favor because I got all sidetracked. By the way, Dan, I can't remember the name of the stable that I used to train at. The equestrian center stable. I want to say it was the northwest suburbs. It was near. I want to say it was not far from like Norwich. It was in that area. I want to say like a forest preserve drive kind of a thing. And we used to actually, when we would go out and ride horses and stuff like that, when we would just like ride slow, we would cross that forest preserve drive or whatever that road was. But it was like northwest, maybe northwest side, still in Chicago, but near something like Norwich or one of those northwest.
Happy Day Stables.
Yeah, where's that?
It was in Norwich, Illinois.
That's it. That's got to be it then. What does it have an address or did it?
It's got its own Facebook group, but that's about it.
Okay, that's probably where I went. Happy Day Stables. That's probably where I went. It was in Norwich. Yeah. That sounds right. But anyway, we got a little sidetracked here. Okay, now in this case, curry means it's a Middle English word to groom a horse, while favor is a corruption of favel, the name of a chestnut-colored horse that appeared in an old French poem and folktale about a horse who wanted to usurp its master and take over his kingdom. In the tale, favel succeeds in his quest and ends the story by being fawned over and curried by all the members of his master's court. Currying favor literally means sycophantically grooming a chestnut horse. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. The face in shamefaced doesn't mean visage. Shamefaced was originally shamefast, with fast in the sense meaning fixed or constant, as it as in steadfast or stuck fast. Presumably the word changed over time because the shame of a shamefaced person can be seen on his or her expression. So it was shamefast. The chalk and chalk full does not mean a wedge or block. The chalk full, being chalk full has nothing to do with being rammed as tightly into a chalk or below a door or the wheels of a vehicle. Instead, chalk in this context is derived from choke, the sense that something being suffocated or crammed or crowded. So basically that coffee brand is, what are you, you're choking the nuts? Chock full of nuts. And by the way, that's a brand name I've never understood. It's coffee, right? And there are no nuts in coffee. Coffee, they're beans, right?
They are beans, yes.
They're not nuts. They're not legumes. I don't understand chock full of nuts. I've never understood it. Never understood it. That's my parents' go-to brand of coffee, too. They love the chock full of nuts. That's also the coffee shop in Escape from New York, where Snake Plissken meets the girl that and eventually gets killed and drugged down by the crazies into the hole of the floor. And he's in a chock full of nuts, coffee store. And oh, another little piece of trivia: that actress in the chock full of nuts in Escape from New York is Susan Hubley, who at the time was Kurt Russell's wife.
Since we're talking about fun etymology types of things, chock full of nuts.
Okay.
1926, William Black opened his first nut shop on Broadway and 43rd Street. 1932, chock full of nuts coffee shops were born. After the Depression struck, even William Black's shelled nuts seemed too much of a luxury, so he converted his chain of 18 nut shops into small coffee shops, selling a good cup of coffee and a sandwich for a nickel.
But he never changed the name.
Never changed the name.
Because it did start out as a nut shop. Oh, all right. All right, well, now I understand. See, the D and D-Day does not stand for disembarkment. Disembarkment. It also doesn't mean deliverance, Deutschland, doomsday, decision, or any other of the D words that are popular in history that you might believe. In fact, the D doesn't stand for anything. D-Day is an alternative placeholder used during the planning of Normandy's landings for the unspecified day on which the operation would take place. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Oh, let's see. The good and goodbye does not mean good. Goodbye is a contraction of God be with you, an expression of departure or best wishes in use in English from the medieval period. As the phrase simplified over time, God drifted toward good in other similar expressions like good day and good morning. By the late 16th century, we were left with the word that we use today, which is goodbye. So that comes from God be with you. I think I knew that. I think I knew that one. So, all right. Not as straightforward. I still think we need to bring quicksand back. Needs to be a staple in adventure films again. Once again, I think we're missing something. If you have any thoughts on any of this stuff, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here is Dwayne on WGN. Hi, Dwayne.
Good morning. That stable you're talking about was on the east side of Cumberland Avenue, north of Forest Preserve Drive, and it's been gone 20, maybe 30 years. I think there's a restaurant there now or something.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where it was, Dwayne. That's exactly the place. That is, without question, the place where I went. Yeah, and I'm there's probably like a Red Lobster or something there now. So.
No, it's south of the Red Lobster. Oh, I know the Red Lobster you're talking about.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
All right,
Dwayne, thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, see ya. No, that's definitely it. Cumberland by near Forest Preserve Drive. Yeah. I forgot it was called Happy Time Stables. Well, I did have a happy time.
How often did you go?
Once a week? Maybe. A couple times a week, once a week, yeah.
And I know we poked fun at you, but did you have your own horse that you regularly ride?
Yes.
Or was it Buttercup or something?
No. It wasn't Buttercup. It was Thunder, actually.
That was it.
I mean, you know, it wasn't my horse, but it was the one that I liked the most that I got. You know, this is a true thing, and I know that people, you know, you got to get along with the horse that you're going to ride. You have to. You know, it's funny, you know, Jeff Bridges just got the Irving Thalberg Award, or not the Irving Thalberg Award, got the Cecil B. DeMille Award for Lifetime Achievement. And of course his acceptance speech was just fantastic. And you know, Jeff Bridges being the coolest dude on the planet and my favorite actor of all time. And it was just fantastic. I watched his acceptance speech at least three times already, the Golden Globes the other night. In his acceptance speech for this Lifetime Achievement Award, Dan, he named and thanked his stand-in. Now, I've never... You know, who does that? Only Jeff Bridges, you know. We've made 60 films together. 60 films. He's worked on 60 films with this guy. And he's like, this is the through line to my career. But he also, who was it that thanked his horse? Somebody just won an award and thanked his horse. And it was the same horse. This is one of those horses that's used on movie sets that's really well-behaved, not a maniac, because a lot of horses, you know, a lot of crazy stuff happens on movie sets, and of course, if you're shooting a Western and you've got gunshots going off, the horses don't like that. But he thanked his horse, and I can't remember who it was. An actor thanked his horse, and it was Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels when he won an Emmy for the Western that he did on Netflix. So Jeff Daniels thanked his horse, and it was the same horse that Jeff Bridges had in True Grit. It was the same horse, and Jeff Bridges is thanking his stand-in, and Jeff Daniels is thanking his horse. You gotta love both those guys, man. But yeah, a lot of those, it was going back. I think we talked about this before. We were talking about how famous animals, appear in so many movies. Like we were talking about a gorilla, right? Or
the bear.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, whatever the bear's name. Max, is it Max the bear? Or
let me check.
Not Billy Bear. No, Billy Bear's a character in 48 Hours. That's right. No, but anyway, that bear was in everything. And then I believe, like, didn't like the bear's spawn also become a famous
Bart the Bear?
Bart the Bear, and then it was like Bart Jr. or
Bart,
something.
Yeah, Bart the Bear too.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, so Jeff Daniels and Jeff Bridges shared the same horse, and I can't remember the name of the Western that the TV show that Jeff Daniels was on, but it was the same horse that that Bridges had in True Grit. So, hey, you know when Clint Eastwood, still to this day, he does not say action on his set. You know, and I mean, you know, Clint, you know, like, let's just shoot it once, and then I want to golf. But he just he does not yell action. His sets are very, very quiet, and he just goes, "Okay, go ahead." And then the you know they roll. He's like, "Roll, okay, go ahead." And the reason why he does that is because all the westerns he made, somebody would yell action, the horses it would spook the horses. So he still he does that because even if there's no, he hasn't made a movie with a horse in it in a long time, you know. But even if he's making like you know, I mean, he just did The Mule, and there's no horses in that. Well, the, it's called The Mule, but. It, that's sort of a, he's a lot of driving and there's a lot of domestic stuff in it and stuff, but he never yells action. Every single person who's ever worked with Clint Eastwood is like, I don't know whether we're actually rolling or not because he's so quiet. And that's because, and he said in interviews, he's like, I got sick and tired of being thrown from horses and, you know, the horses being spooked and then we have to wait another 20 minutes for the horses to calm down to try to do the thing again. And then they'd yell action again and the horse would go nuts. So that's why he doesn't say action on his sets. Because it spooks the and his he goes I don't say action on my sets because it spooks the horses. Even though there's no horses in the movie, that's what he says. All right, we got to break here for some weather, and then we're going to talk about some products that that we're going to talk about some products that you didn't ever thought would be obsolete.